Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
And it's all over!
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Obi-Wan Kenobi, covering all of the statistics and the social media that we need and or want for as long as the FCC will allow us to use the internet today.
So don't start that.
Wrong show. Sorry. So, yes, we've got a lot of stuff to cover. And Ken, I apologize. Prior to the show has jinxed us from now seeing Michael Chandler and Will Brooks three more times.
I don't know who those people are, even.
All
so
on
I
pay-per-view.
Guess, whatever. I jinxed something that doesn't exist.
Bellator has a pay-per-view this weekend. We will talk about that.
I don't think that's a good idea.
We will also congratulate Chuck Liddell, I think. I don't really know how to handle this.
Does he get that John Jones fight?
No, he does not get the John Jones fight. Oh. But on
he walked through him on
Thursday of this week was his 16th anniversary of the very first UFC fight he had in 1998.
Wow. We have to keep track of that kind
of
stuff
now? I don't
know.
It seemed interesting enough to mention.
If he were still fighting, then maybe. I don't know. I think he's going to get that John Jones fight.
You really think
he's
so?
He's going to walk through him.
Walk through him.
Clearly, he's going to walk through him. 16 years of experience. I mean, that's almost as old as John Jones in general. So there's a lot there that we can bet on with Chuck Liddell.
All right, Saturday night, it was a card that if Sean were here, we would have been playing a lot of Who the Hell Is That Guy? But they went, we don't care that you don't know who we are. We're going to knock everybody out for 5 straight hours. It was a fantastic card if you watched it from top to bottom.
Absolutely.
Even if you did not,
okay.
Joe.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I think
it's okay.
It's
your show.
You and I were talking about this off the show because you mentioned the 5 hours. I wasn't the only one surprised that it started at 10, was I?
No, because it was funny. I on Saturday night, I had the benefit of catching John Legend here in town, and I got back late and thought for sure I was watching this on DVR.
I missed it.
Sit down, DVR. Nope, we hadn't even gotten to the main card yet.
I did not have my night planned properly at all, and I watched some of the prelims, which were kind of fun to watch. I didn't even make it to the main event. I had to watch it. I watched it on DVR because I planned my night. You got to plan your drinking properly,
right.
And I did not realize they were giving this pay-per-view scheduling time. That was a little weird to me to start it at 10.
It was, because, I mean, traditionally, Joe, as you know better than anybody, those things kind of start at 8. You know, the Fox Sports 1 started at
8. 9 at worst.
Yeah, they're done 10 or 11 o'clock, and you're on your... Not that... Look, nobody in here is 90, so that's not a big deal, but I was with you. I thought it started at 8. I thought for sure I was going to just blow through the DVR.
Well, and it was in Cincinnati, too. It's not like it was on the West Coast or it was in another country.
I, on the other hand, guys, planned my night around it. So my friends were brewing beer that night. I got there early, had a couple beers, left by 8 o'clock, 8:15. So then I skipped through some commercials and was able to watch from 8 till.
Nice.
All right.
I feel like your friends are always brewing, though. Like,
anytime
I would show up in your neighborhood at any point, there would just be somebody making something in a
That's
vat.
That's a good chance. If not, we'll have beer on tap.
You know what he's not doing is texting us and letting us know what time this thing starts. That's a stat.
You're always invited.
Aren't that you is on top of that stat?
That is a stat that we're never invited to these things. But that said, it was a fantastic night of fights that, as promised, I think delivered in every place that it needed to deliver. You saw, in my opinion, one of the most incredible main event fights that I've seen in a long time for different reasons than, let's say, John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson, right? The back and forth battle of two guys kind of, you know, and John turns on the championship level fighter and ends up pulling it out in the end.
Yeah.
What you have here is a fighter that, as we talked about, and we even talked with Kenny Florian a little bit last week about how Matt Brown is a guy who, the more he won, the further away he got from a title shot, which seems really counterintuitive, but that was what was happening. This guy gets dropped in the first round. Eric Silva has 2 minutes on his back trying to submit him, and somehow Matt Brown is able to win the first round, which I think if I wrote that sentence down on a piece of paper, you would call me insane, and then proceeds to literally suck the soul out of Eric Silva, who I'm convinced is made of adamantium, if you're a Wolverine X-Men fan, because I don't know how somebody takes that much damage and does not get dropped much sooner than they actually did.
Or go to sleep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Elbows,
still, I mean, he didn't even get knocked out at the end. I mean, eventually, that fight should have been stopped, but
yeah,
even at the end, he never went out.
No.
And he took a beat. I think we saw a flash, and that's what I'll call it. I know you say he had 2 minutes to work, but I'll say that flash at the beginning is maybe why we saw some of those lines for Eric Silva as a favorite. I think that quick knockdown power and that quick KO power that he's shown was the reason a lot of folks thought that he might be able to win this fight against Matt Brown. He would have been able to win this fight, except Matt Brown is just a tough SOB, and he was able to kind of get through that first minute and a half, 2 minutes. Like you said, more amazing even than he comes back and wins the fight is probably that he won that round.
Yes.
Because I don't want to say we've seen a lot of guys come back, but we've certainly seen fighters in the UFC take a bad first round or get rocked for 2 minutes straight and then kind of eke through that round, defend themselves, not really engage, get through it, sit down, go to their corner, reset, and then they'll take the fight.
Yes.
They'll win the next two rounds. But he won the actual round.
Yeah, you rarely see it. And I saw it on Twitter, and I thought it was the most apropos analogy. It seemed like a WWE match. You know, the guy gets knocked down and then hulks up and then takes. Because when have you seen a guy who literally, that was like superhero stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to give you a chance to kick me in the stomach. If you don't literally kill me, I'm going to stand up and then in a minute, I'm going to throw you across the octagon and proceed to pound you one upside and then down the other.
So Matt took two huge shots to the abdomen. He actually curled over a little bit there and, you know, we were afraid he was going to go out.
Yep.
He came out afterwards and said that he actually started leaving his face open to try and recover from the body shots. So he wanted Eric Silva to hit him in the face to recover from the body shot.
He was telling Ariel Helwani this week that, he did that specifically and was glad that Eric took the bait and started punching him in the head because he needed to, like, recoup his tum-tum.
He didn't want to. Yeah, those body shots, you take too many, and that's what will stop you in a round. So smart move. I mean, not obviously something your coaches are ever going to write down and say, hey, why don't you go get hit in the head real quick so you can recover. But you do what you have to do when you're inside the octagon.
And let me ask you guys this, because I haven't talked to you since the fight happened. But when I watched that fight and I watched what Matt Brown is able to do in the nearly 10 minutes after he gets dropped, to me looked like a guy who you absolutely, despite of what Dana White said, which he agreed with me, but despite that, your opinions about, I mean, that looked like to me a number one contender performance.
Absolutely. And so I was looking at the rankings and some of the other guys who are ranked above him. Well, nobody's got a 7-fight win streak.
Yeah, what are you and your friends thinking, Eric?
Yeah,
in these rankings.
He moved up one spot over the number four.
Let me find the Twitter account that can tell you what me and my friends are thinking.
that guy's a big fan.
He only moved up one spot, so he's ranked number six. So let's just go through who's ahead of him. Robbie Lawler is number one coming off a loss.
That's Rory a win.
Rory McDonald.
We're going to go do win-loss with Matt Brown.
Tyrone Woodley.
That's a draw.
Carlos Condit.
That's a win because Condit only got one leg.
And Jake Ellenberger.
That's a win.
Yeah, so if he's at most one fight away.
So when I was going through this, and I didn't talk to many of my friends on the ranking poll.
Okay,
when I was going through this, this was a difficult one for me because my heart wanted to just put him at two, right?
Yeah,
like he's the guy.
Absolutely.
Because after that performance, you know. But then I sat down and I tried to what Ken calls a victim of now. I tried not to be a victim of now. And you look at it, and these other guys have done the hard work, right?
Yeah.
And I really do want to see him meet one. Not all of these guys. He's six right now. I had him at six as well. I don't think he needs to beat four more people, right?
Sure.
He needs to pick one of them. Somebody said Hector Lombard. Fine. He fights Hector Lombard. He beats Hector Lombard. I think it's game over. He gets his title shot.
I agree with you. I'm a little frustrated that he's got a better record than everybody above him. And I'm a little frustrated that some of these guys, Tyrone Woodley, he's a great fighter, but some of these guys have talked their way into the top five.
But to Tyrone's credit, he's walked the walk then.
He talked
himself into that Condit fight and then did what he said he was going to do.
Sure.
And so I get it, but Chael changed the game, and there's not much we can do about that part.
And Tyrone, you love watching Chael, and he sells
and
fights.
You love watching Woodley, because Woodley will run his mouth, and Woodley puts on a great performance, and that was a fantastic performance against a guy who's really dangerous.
Completely agree.
And so I don't disagree with you. I would love it if we lived in another universe where it was just wins, losses, and that's how you got it. But there's always that splash of WWE drama that needs to be in there.
Yeah, but he didn't take a step away this weekend.
I know
you made that mention earlier. Not at all. I mean, not with fight of the night. The only thing I'm thinking, if you're going to look at this and try to decide who and what and where you would put these rankings, is a guy like Tyrone Woodley, is he going to let a guy like Matt Brown come back if he catches him like that in the first round? I don't think so. As tough as Matt Brown is, and as well as he performed on Saturday night, you got to think Tyrone Woodley knocks him down like that. He's going to finish the fight, and that's where you start. You have to put your supposition in these rankings somewhere, and sure. You have to start looking at these guys. Condit, I love him, but he's injured. I don't understand why. And we discussed this a lot last week, I know, and I don't want to get into it again, but he's injured. Why is he holding that? Is it four, three, or four spot?
Three?
Four spot.
Four.
So he's holding that four spot where you know, a guy like Matt Brown, okay, he's top five. I can live with Matt Brown's top five, but right now he's not top five, and
yeah,
that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, so not that I want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but there's no real direction. Like, Nate Diaz falls out. We talked about that. I don't want to go back, but there's no direction, Ken, as to if what's the time frame. You know, Dominic Cruz is still at number two. Nobody told me to drop him.
Yeah.
What do I do with Carlos Condit? He's out for a year with a knee injury. Do I drop him down to 16 and off of the list?
I
don't know.
There needs to be clarity, not only for the people giving the rankings, but the people who are looking at interpreting them, too.
Because, if you just told me, if these things happen, you have to respond. And if you don't respond, I'm kicking you off the panel. I'm fine with those. But I'm left to sit there on Sunday night, Monday morning, and just go, well, I think he's better than six, but all of these guys have done stuff. And
but
I don't
is he
know.
Better than a healthy Carlos Condit? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know because I don't have a healthy Condit. Do I dump Condit out and move him up by proxy? I don't know. Right.
I was just surprised that after that fight, you see, and again, I always say that, but don't be a victim of now. My feeling, and I know you guys take this a lot more seriously, and you do due diligence for the most part. Well, some of you and your friends. For the most part, guys like you. You know, I'm not saying you go, yeah, it's women's, whatever. I'm saying some of the guys probably don't take it as serious. Most do. It's just weird when you watch that fight, you're like, he's top five. And then like 2 days later, you go, look, well, he's sick. What? That's weird. Why is he sick? What's Jake Ellenberger doing? Is he going to beat Jake Ellenberger? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
And that's a good one that maybe I should have flip-flopped because Ellenberger, I don't think, will beat Matt Brown.
You don't think so?
No.
Yeah,
but
he's only coming off a loss against what? The number two guy?
Sure.
Rory McDonald?
Like,
and, you know.
I really like the Lombard fight. So part of me kept him there so that made sense in my mind. I think, okay, you fight Lombard and then you're good in my mind. You're exactly where Tyrone Woodley is and Robbie Lawler. You can sit right there because even though Robbie's coming off of a loss, let's be honest, that was a really, really fantastic fight. None of you would care if they put him right back in there against Johnny Hendricks.
Well, it's a loss to the champ, too.
Yeah, and to go on that, playing things out a little, Jake Ellenberger is going to fight Robbie Lawler at UFC 173. Fight of the night performance there might get the next person. Well, so if Jake wins, gets the next title
shot. So Jake, even though you don't think he could beat Matt Brown, this could be an interesting situation where I think Jake lines up a little better with Robbie, where maybe Jake beats Robbie, and then all of a sudden you got him pulling away from Matt Brown, who we think could probably beat him, but we're not going to get to see that fight yet. So as much as I get that they're trying to clean up the division, it's interesting. It's a little bit of what the UFC wants, too. They want four or five guys that can be in the mix.
Sure.
Now, they need to sell a guy. I don't think it would hurt anybody's feelings over there at Zuffa headquarters if Johnny Hendricks could just hold that belt for a couple times.
Sure.
And, you know, let us throw Challenger of the Week at him.
Well, especially if these challengers are Matt Brown and Robbie Lawler, guys that are going to go out there and bring it to him and give you fights where you're like, I can't wait. Wait, who's fighting anyone at 170? Cool, here's my $70.
Yep,
all those guys at 170 are awesome.
Well, yeah.
$70, $70.
What you want to start hearing is, Johnny Hendricks is fighting this weekend. I want to see that.
Yep, because he's going to put on a great fight, and everybody at 170 is a beast. So these here, $70, $70, $70, where you're not in the same situation that you were, let's say, with Anderson Silva, right? Where Anderson was just plowing through people. So you're watching to see what amazing Bruce Lee-esque stuff he was going to do. In this case, I think you have a weight class where can Johnny hold on to the belt? Absolutely. Is he going to have to earn it every time? At this point,
yep.
He's going to have to earn it against every one of these guys that's top five or six.
Yeah, he's more of a grinder. Just like you said, Anderson Silva was just having his way with guys where Johnny Hendricks goes out and puts five rounds on, I actually like to see. I love seeing – if I'm paying $70, I really want to see championship rounds. I want to see four and five.
You want to see that, and different stuff for different fans. There are fans that like the idea that Johnny is going to fight people. You know, he's not going to lay back a little bit and try and figure out your pacing.
Well, especially in this division.
On that one.
Especially in this division. It's what you see whenever an NFL coach gets fired. You know, you want whatever's the opposite of the last dude. The last dude was a hard ass and he was screaming at the players and he was a rules guy. You're like, oh, man, you got to get a guy that loosens up. So you hire the next dude, and that goofball ruins your team. Talking as a Lions fan, that goofball probably runs your team for 3 or 4 years and screws it up. Oh, we need discipline. Well, this is kind of the same thing. We saw greatness. We saw a legendary fighter in GSP for a long time, but it's nice to have that other side of it and to kind of see, oh, this guy's just going to go out there and fight.
Well,
and we know you got to be smart, and we know you're a great fighter if you're a champion. But again, like you said, he's not going to wait 2 or 3 rounds to figure things out. He's going to go in there and fight.
And you get this other side of 170 where, you talk a lot about this, Ken, that you want to build up fighters. Well, a guy like Johnny Hendricks is going to bring everybody up with him because every one of these, like, if you were somebody who didn't follow the UFC early on and didn't watch Showtime and didn't pay attention to Strikeforce, when you watched Johnny Hendricks and Robbie Lawler, you and your friends, when you walked out of Buffalo Wild Wings, you knew who Robbie Lawler was.
Mm-hmm.
You absolutely knew who he was, and you can't wait for UFC 173 to see what he can do next because you went, that was a crazy fight. Totally want to see another crazy fight with that guy.
That was the guy who almost beat the champ, or some people think beat the champ.
Yeah,
you know?
Depending on how you scored that thing. A couple other great fights, Costa Philippou and Lawrence Larkin. Larkin was throwing bombs, but I apologize to whom this was, if it's either MMA Fighting or MMA Weekly. Somebody astutely wrote down what the issue was with Larkin, is that Larkin throws heavy, but is not very good in what somebody would call those extra steps of combo. So he throws 1-2, he's good at that. Mm-hmm. But you get to 3-4-5, and he leaves his head wide open, and this is what happened. Costa Philippou takes it off for you.
I think his problem was he was staying in front of Costa Philippou. Costa came just like a madman. He was throwing bombs and it, kind of threw caution to the wind. And if you watch the way that fight finished, he was just charging left, right, left, right, touch him with the right, and lights out.
It was a great look for Costa Philippou. You know, he's got a great record, but a guy that I think most people sleep on. You know, you don't think, oh, Costa Philippou.
Yeah.
Even though he's a great striker, so is Larkin. We knew going into this kind of what this could look like, and Costa really kind of delivered. And then, of course, we told you that our boy Darren Cruikshank was going to get this thing done, and he absolutely kicked to the body, kicked to the head, and that's all for Eric Cope.
Beautiful.
And you want to talk about a guy who kind of upsets a division because they certainly wanted Eric Cope out of 145 to 155 to see if he could make something happen. And Cruikshank was like, well, that's cool, but I want that spot.
Yeah.
So here is my kick to the head, and I will take that spot at 155.
It'll be interesting to see where things line up in that division, too, because he's not a guy who's going to be at the championship level yet, but, man, he looked great on Saturday morning, Sunday morning. I don't even know when that happened.
Whenever you touched it. Great, great.
Too late. That thing was too late. It was not a pay-per-view. I'm very confused.
All right, speaking of pay-per-views, when we come back, Bellator's got one.
What?
But it's not what they told you you were going to have. We'll talk about it next. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.
Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, Obi-Wan Kenobi, holding everything down as far as analytics, statistics, and social media. We were talking about UFC on Fox Sports 1. Matt Brown beating out Eric Silva in a fantastic fight. If you've not had a chance to catch it, make sure if you're catching any replays or anything like that, you can find it and check it out, because he is going to be a very important player at 170, as there are a lot of things coming down the pike this year that will afford him opportunities, I think, sooner than later to fight for the title at some point. And speaking of the title, we had a title fight in Bellator that's supposed to be this weekend, as their very first pay-per-view was supposed to happen, as we were supposed to get Chandler versus Alvarez 3, or as we were calling it, you get it twice free. Third time we charge you for it. But that didn't happen, as Alvarez has a concussion. So the actual winner of the tournament, Will Brooks, will step in against Michael Chandler as they go for pay-per-view with a headlining fight of Rampage versus King Mo for all of the marbles.
Why aren't we seeing the Tito Rampage fight if they're both on this card? I don't understand.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Bellator.
Well,
you wanted me to answer like Bjorn would, so that's how I would answer.
What's going on?
Yeah, so Rampage Jackson, Tito hurt his neck and was out for a while, so Rampage decided,
I thought he cracked
his
skull again.
No, it was his neck.
Okay.
So he decided, hey, I better pick a beef with another guy, and he chose King Mo. And so these two guys have been beefing and going at, and a lot of people speculated that it might even be staged because they went in there completely
with those
WWE
two. No,
style.
No, not yeah. not the two fans
you
of professional
it,
wrestling.
Ken.
They would have never done that.
So I think that's what led up to
it. I don't even mind. I probably like that fight better.
Me too.
I'm not going to buy this, but I like that fight better than I'm just curious because that was supposed to be their first pay-per-view, right?
It Tito, was. Yeah. Tito Rampage and Rampage and that obviously got canceled, mm-hmm. and then they moved it to this, and they said no matter what happens, and of course jinxed themselves when they said that, no matter what happens, we're going to push through on this thing, and then the worst thing possible could happen, which is they've had two marquee fights that everybody who likes MMA has talked about, Chandler and Alvarez. They were going to do a third time, and Alvarez gets injured, and so that's not going to happen.
I do want to congratulate Bellator, though, because the top six fighters on the main card do have Wikipedia pages, which I think is a step forward for our friends at Bellator. They may be making them now, but hey, good on you, Bellator. Good on you.
I think the Chandler Brooks fight will be good. Oh, Ortiz and Shlemenko that's a sideshow fight.
Who's
that's
Chandler
a carny
Brooks?
Fight.
That's the
Michael Chandler and Will Brooks.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Same thing for Ken
Jackson.
I thought
maybe Will
Mo.
Had a brother and they were going to do tag team MMA because that might. Right. Why don't we talk about that? Bellator, tag team MMA. Then maybe I'll pay you.
Fair enough.
How much is this?
They're partnered with TNA, so I mean, maybe that doesn't seem like it's
how
out of
much
there.
Is this?
$45.
What do I pay for UFC?
I know.
This doesn't make any sense. Shlemenko versus Ortiz?
You don't have any interest in Rampage King Mo.
Paying for it? No. No, I don't. Not going to pay for it.
It's a sideshow to me. You know, it has
Rampage
no...
and King Mo is?
Yeah.
Really?
Completely.
I mean, I'll give you the Shlemenko Ortiz fight is, you know, there's, I don't know.
King Mo is up there, but Rampage is, he's peaked ago. Are you going to pay for it, Eric?
I don't know. I mean, you've got me at a point this week where there isn't anything else on, which is brilliant by Bellator's back because there's a couple people on this card that I think everybody knows, and there's nothing else on. So could I? Possibly.
Here's
sure.
the weird thing. If you, not that I'm trying to push this guy to the moon, but if you have Chet Congo on the roster, why is he sitting in your prelims? I don't understand that either.
I don't understand that either.
I get maybe he, because, you know, that's the cleanup spot, so to speak, on the prelims. So maybe that's it. I don't know. But, I mean, if you're going to, you got to throw a lot of UFC guys on this if you're going to get people to spend $45.
Yeah, and I think you'd, especially with something like Bellator, where you're in essence, I would say for the most part, you're building a brand, not necessarily fighters, because you're doing a tournament style, so you, there's no guarantee who wins the tournaments. And so that cleanup spot just needs to be anybody who's going to put on an awesome fight and get you to make that next step, where I can see Chuck Congo and Ken Evans, which I know both of those guys, so I'm gonna pay for that fight, as opposed to, like you said, Ken, putting him on the cleanup spot when you should put him on the pay-per-view, because that's one more guy where... If it's a bunch of guys on Saturday night looking for something to do and they go, oh, isn't Rampage fighting? We should let's do that thing.
Nobody's going, hey, look, Rick Rainey. Rick Rainey's on the card.
Ricky Rainey.
Rick, whatever. You don't even know that for sure. There's not enough research on the guy. So Rick Rainey, Ricky Rainey.
Is that a real person?
That is a real person.
So Ricky Rainey's family isn't even looking at this and going, hey, Ricky's on the card. They're going, hey, Chuck's on the card.
To be fair, Ken might be right. I can't even prove that's true. But
you can't. Go get on Wiki. Click, click, click. There's no link, brother.
Watch if you have a Wiki page.
Watch Ricky Rainey have the best fight of the night. See, I've reverse jinxed him.
You have reversed
that. Good on Ricky Rainey.
Bjorn really is excited about that. So that is on pay-per-view this weekend. You can check that out. Another fight that I actually thought, I got a tweet last night from one of our longtime fans, Will, who was like, hey, were you pushing for Uriah Faber and Alex Caceres to headline the UFC Grand Rapids card? And I thought, oh, he's got to be joking. That's really funny. And then I see that that's a real fight at UFC 175.
Which is not in Grand Rapids.
But anyone else think that that's kind of really odd for Uriah Faber?
He wanted to fight 4th of July weekend.
Right.
Alex called him out pseudo. It's a good W under his belt. You know, so I think that's
a good W on his belt for who? Uriah?
For Uriah, yeah.
I Alex Caceres?
Well, it's a win coming off a loss.
Okay.
You know, he's
all right.
And this is coming from the guy who wants to fight four or five times a year, too.
Of course he does. But I guess what we've traditionally seen from Uriah is he's fighting guys that move him in a direction that gets closer to that gold thing,
as opposed to
just like a dude.
Oh, I completely agree.
Yeah, but I am really looking forward to a stare down on the fourth card down on the match, because Uriah doesn't do a fight unless he does a stare down in the center of the cage. Okay, I guess we're doing this. I guess we're doing this. He's smart, though. He's got that sensibility. You want to be on this card.
Oh, sure you do.
Right. You know, this is one of those deals where...
You want to be... I mean, we're going to talk to Matt Hughes in a second about this whole weekend, because you've got a pay-per-view and then the Ultimate Fighter finale all in the same weekend. So, yeah, you want to be a part of that conversation, because it's the busiest weekend of the year, save for that week coming up that we've got one in Uganda and then another one.
Yeah, well, that doesn't compare to this, though. I mean,
Uriah Faber doesn't want to get on the Swanson Stevens card. He's not politicking anywhere for that one. Like, hey, if I could just get in front of Gastelum and right. get on that card. Now, you wait a week. Just wait a week and be on this card that right. everybody's actually going to pay for and watch.
So, yes, he's smart, and yes, you want to be a part of this. And kudos to Caceres for being a part of the conversation, because why wouldn't Alex want to be a part of this weekend? That if yeah. you're going to be
There's
doing,
no for lose sure. for him, really.
Nope. No, I mean, you put on a great performance, you get a better fight. You lose to Uriah, people go, well,
you
that's
lost
your,
to Uriah.
You lost yeah. to Uriah Faber, yeah. who only loses in title fights. So, clearly, you are destined to lose. So there is that. Also, this week we posted it on Facebook. Lots of you talking about it. Boss Rutten saying that John Jones is, in fact, a dirty fighter.
I liked his points. He said that John Jones is completely calm and in control of his body in the ring.
Yes.
Or in the cage.
Yep.
So if you buy that, then you also have to buy that he knows what he's doing with his hands. Being he puts them in the opponent's face and their eyes get poked. It's not just his last fight. This has happened throughout his career.
Sure.
So I'm with Boss Rutten on this one. Well, you are in control of your weapon, being your body, being your hand out, poking guys in the eyes. You know exactly that.
Stop
if I
doing
do this,
that. You did that last week. I
you did
got
that
my
to me
poked.
Last week. I got my hand. Well,
now I'm defending.
My face now yeah.
we're just over here. Well, I mean, I think we kind of skirted. We did talk about this last week. I wanted to skirt because I didn't want to take anything away from John Jones' performance, and I kind of came in strong with, hey, if you do it, take the point. And I'm still
yep. yeah.
I'm still in that
yeah.
camp. I probably believe that John Jones knows a little bit what he's doing. I don't know if I'm as adamant as Boss about it. Things are still going to happen. A fight's a fight. You're not going to necessarily have that range perfect every time, even John Jones. Am I leaning toward the fact that he's probably more in control of his body than he lets on when he accidentally does something like that? Probably.
Yeah, but I don't know that it's accidental. You know, when we give all this credit to Anderson Silva for figuring out his opponents, we give all this credit to GSP for having a really, 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 really extraordinarily high fight IQ, able to adapt on a dime to, you know, whatever the situation presents itself. Play this out. You know, you want the point taken? He doesn't care. He knows he's going to win the round, right? Mm-hmm. So it's 9-9. What the hell does he care? What he has achieved, if he pokes you in the eye, is when he puts that out and he doesn't poke, he just leaves it out there like that, you are less likely to close the distance, right? Because you think you're going to get poked, and nobody likes to get poked in the eye, which then puts you, in boxing vernacular, in no man's land for him to sock you in the face.
So even if he's not poking, he's still using that
yep.
as a deterrent.
Well,
right?
and look, if you're going to take the point, he's not doing anything. Is it morally wrong? Sure, but it's not against the rules.
Yeah, but
right.
I think that's enough of a punishment, because I think what you're going to see, he gets into another fight with Alexander Gustafsson, those points matter a lot. Sure, in this last fight, it didn't matter. He pulled the guy's arm out of socket in the first round.
Right.
But in a fight like Gustafsson, it's better than nothing, I guess. I guess let's try. Why don't we try to enforce the rules
this
and
is
just
what
take
I'm
the
saying.
Point
like,
and see what
like,
happens?
You know, because if you're right, Ken, and that eye poke costs him the title against Gustafsson, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to adapt his strategy and never do that again. But right now, nobody is calling the points. And so he gets to win in two things. He gets to cheat.
Cake and eat it,
yeah.
too.
You know, he gets to cheat because nobody's calling the points. And he gets you to stay in no man's land so he can sock you in the face however he wants to. In this particular fight, he used it for a different reason. In my opinion, and I am not Greg Jackson, so please don't quote me on this, but John had to adapt the strategy because Glover was winding up looking to take his head off. So he was using it to keep Glover from winding up so he could close the distance himself and get it up against the cage and then start ripping things out of sockets and elbowing him in the head.
So Greg Jackson is known, too, of pushing the rules to the farthest that they can, and I think this is just one piece of it. Another piece is this oblique kick, which is technically legal, and even in this fight, he did a flying sidekick to his knee. He wasn't aiming at the abdomen. He
but
was
I guess, like,
to his
I,
knee to blow his knee out.
But we're fighting, man.
We are, but you also
like,
aren't fighting.
But you're talking to a guy, look, you're talking to a guy in myself, Joe, that I want soccer kicks back.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say about them. If somebody is down on all fours, they either protect themselves or they get their head kicked off.
In UFC 1, Horian Gracie said there's like 8 rules and only 8 rules. One of them was no biting. He said humans. We're not animals. There's no biting. So within that respect, you have to, if you're blowing guys' knees out by doing flying sidekicks at their knees, I think that's a little
extreme. But he's not actually done that, because you know what?
He tried to.
Most fighters know that they don't plant that foot so hard that their knee's going to get knocked out.
Let me change the discussion for a second, okay? You don't like the oblique kick because you think he's trying to blow their
knee.
You
sound like those people. You sound like those people that don't like 12 to 6 elbows because,
oh, look how bad that looks.
We don't even need to go there, right? We can just go straight to Ronda Rousey, who's trying to break your arm. What's the difference?
Agreed.
What's the difference?
Fair enough.
I got to jump over to Joe's side. Knees are different. Knees are definitely different. You got to set your, you got to put your weight on them. There's a lot. You can twist the knee out of place, and you can only break an arm so many ways. Even when you break the arm.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. There's rules on what things I can't hurt in a UFC fight.
No.
I didn't know.
But I'm not on his side as far as I think you set up for it. You defend it. You let the guy know. When he's going into a fight, this could happen. I think they defend against it. I don't think it becomes an issue, because let's say this as well. Let's go to your example, Ronda Rousey. As good as she is at arm bars, as great as she is at getting you in that position, and she grabs your arm. Guess what? She's not actually broken anybody's arm. She's never actually broken anybody's arm.
She did. Yeah, she
in the UFC.
Not in the UFC. In Strikeforce, she broke one of the girls.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about UFC. Yeah, but no. I remember that. But I'm saying, as much as we all, she's going to go out and break your arm. That rarely actually happens. You know,
right.
Tim Sylvia had his arm broke by Frank Mir.
You can tap out to that. You can't tap out to a flying sidekick to your knee.
And there's always been the discussion on when you get a hold of somebody's leg, how much do you twist, how fast do you twist?
Sure.
Again, it's a fight, and these are the highest class fighters. I'll say, hey, you know what? In Bellator, no oblique kicks. But once you get to UFC, it's every stage of.
But like, you can't lump him in with Paul Harris. He's not, you know, like when you're talking about
he
how fast you
the
twist.
Rules, though.
Okay, but Paul Harris, after you tap, breaks things on you. That is not what John Jones is doing. He is using a legal move that some people find morally questionable.
So I don't know if anybody follows NASCAR, but Jimmy Johnson, he won the title like 5 times in a row, the championship. And they've been suspended a number of times, too, because they push the rules as far as they can. And I see a correlation between the number 48 Jimmy Johnson Lowe's team and Greg Jackson.
Are
just
you getting
pushing
paid
the rules.
By Lowe's? What's going on?
The Coca-Cola Lowe's number 48.
What are you doing?
But my point is that they push the rules. And so that John, I see him less innocent doing that, putting his hand out there, knowing that he pushes the rules.
And with that
being said, though, this has been publicized. Whoever, Gustafson, is going to talk to the ref, or his camp is going to talk to the ref and say, hey, we know he does this. If he does it, you better be calling those points.
And I think
are you talking about the finger pokes? What are we talking
about? The finger poke.
And
I think
that's fine. But, look, there's a muddying of the water, I think, when people talk about John Jones because he's the champion. You automatically get in this upper echelon where you're supposed to be somebody's role model. He didn't sign up for that, right? He didn't get the title so that he could talk to kids about staying in school and staying off drugs. He got the title because he's the best fighter at that weight class, bar none, period, end of statement.
With power comes responsibility.
I don't know Spider-Man that, I don't
oh
know.
Oh my God, did somebody kill John Jones' uncle?
It was Randy Savage.
Oh,
put
God.
Pull up all those movies
God rest
together.
His soul.
Okay. I don't know that. Him doing a totally legal move that you just are uncomfortable with, just like if I got to rule the world, there'd be a lot of people who weren't happy with my soccer kicks to the face. People won't like that move.
You're talking about the oblique kick. We're talking about the finger poke, though. Yeah.
And again, I
rules,
you know
I,
with
point.
Pushing the rules, but you're it's a competitive sport. Of course, you're going to try and skirt the rules. It's like George St. Pierre with the greasing. You know, they alleged greasing.
Grease baths.
Right.
What about his wraps?
When we're alleging things, we're gonna go all in that he took a whole bath in Vaseline. I get your point, Joe. I don't necessarily think they should be illegal. I certainly will side with Joe on the fact that there's a difference. That's the reason the NFL has rules about low hits. There's a difference when you hit somebody low or hit somebody high, take out their knees, twist their leg like Paul Harris. There's going to be a difference.
But
if you wanted to look at this joint kick and call it something like that, fine, but there's other pressing issues.
I'm not going to accept your NFL argument, and here's why. If you're in the NFL, you're only running in two directions. One is going this way, the other one is going that way, right? The running back is running towards the end zone. And so hitting them low, he doesn't really have a way to get out of the way.
He can step out of the way? That's not true at all.
not in the same way that you can, I don't know, step out of the way or defend an oblique kick because it's just you and one other dude. There's not 10 guys trying to take your knees out all at the same time.
My point wasn't that. My point was the fact that there's certainly a difference between somebody's knee or somebody's arm.
Because if you're mad if it's John Jones, his two brothers, and seven other guys kicking you in the oblique, I will agree we probably shouldn't invoke that rule.
That's not what the argument was for.
It feels like that was what the argument was for.
I get what Joe's saying. I'm not worried. There's 10 other things we could do first. But I do think it speaks a bit to the fact that John Jones will take as many liberties as he can.
That's my point.
Because there are other fighters, I'll agree with Joe, that will never use that technique. They just won't do it. That's not in their makeup. That's not what they're going to do. And right or wrong, that's how they feel about it. And John Jones is a guy who will use the technique, and no blame. It's a legal technique. Mm-hmm. It's certainly there. It's his option. And you've got to defend against it and know it going in.
But remember, we had this very similar conversation about a friend of ours named Travis Brown about his illegal elbows to the side of the head when somebody is going for a takedown. You know, everyone was like, are those 12 to 6?
They weren't.
They weren't 12 to 6, but everybody gets uncomfortable with that position because nobody else does it.
Yeah.
Nobody else thinks about doing that. And everybody, every time he fights and he crumples Josh Barnett to the canvas, we talk about, were those legal hits? I don't know about this Travis Brown guy with the illegal hits. This is a sport that's evolving, so things are going to come about. And yes, there's a bunch of people that are not going to point their splayed hands out towards your eyes. John Jones happens to do that, and if you would like him to stop doing it, either A, take a point from him, or B, finish the fight.
So can I have an interesting story on the 12 to 6 elbows? The way that rule was created, John McCarthy talked about this. He was, you know, part of the original committee that came up with the unified rules.
I love
rules.
This story.
Yeah, this is so great. So they're, you know, a bunch of guys who know nothing about martial arts in a room coming up with these rules pretty much based off of boxing. They said, no, you can't allow the 12 to 6 elbow straight down because they watched on ESPN 14 at 3 in the morning these karate masters going through 19 layers of brick and ice. Mm-hmm. So that is why today you can't elbow 12 to 6.
Well, that's pretty brutal. That's a lot of concrete.
That's a lot of ice.
And ice. Anybody seen Karate Kid?
Yes. Just the first one, though.
What they should have outlawed was breathing in and out methodically.
Yes.
Then throwing the 12-6 elbow.
Then throwing the elbow. All right, when we come back, Matt Hughes will join us, talk a little bit of the Fan Expo, the big card coming up on the 4th of July. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior. Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien along with Ken Evans and Joby Juan Kenobi, and joining us right now to talk a little UFC Fight Expo for the fans and two fights back to back. Matt Hughes is back on the program. Matt, how are you?
Good, Eric. How are you doing?
I am excellent. How was your trip? It looked like it was a fruitful one.
I had a very good trip, actually. I just pulled up to my house, and I'm in the car, and I haven't even walked inside yet.
I will make this quick so you can get back to your family. Have you found with
it's
this
all right.
Have you found with this new job that you get to kind of live both lives that, you know, those of us who have been fans of you know that you love? I mean, you get to do these amazing trips. The photos from Africa look nothing. They just look stunning, like you had an amazing time. You have that photo of that Impala on your Uncaged Twitter account. Talk to me a little bit about kind of what this new phase of your career is like.
You know, it's pretty good. I've got a hunting show coming out, which is why I was in Africa. Hunting show coming out in July here of this year on the Sportsman Channel called Uncaged with Matt Hughes. The UFC's given me, but it's been nice enough to give me some footage to use for the hunting show. And also working with the UFC, the Vice President of Athletic Development and Government Relations. So I still got my foot in the door there, helping out in any way I can with the UFC, and always giving them the perspective of the fighter.
So, Matt, at no point at the Fan Expo will you be wearing that Impala like a Game of Thrones character, then?
No, I won't. Nor will I be wearing a suit and tie. So I will be in my blue jeans and T-shirt, no doubt.
So I have been there, and I know how amazing it is, but if you are a new fan to the UFC, and obviously with this deal with Fox, you are getting a lot of new fans, the UFC Fan Expo is the Comic-Con of MMA. It is your chance to 50 UFC stars and celebrities all weekend long, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all of this stuff going on. If somebody has not been there, talk a little bit about what the Fan Expo part is like that weekend in July.
Well, it's every vendor, really, that is associated with fighting that's going to be under the house. And then, you know, the good thing about the UFC is us fighters are easy to obtain. So we're going to be walking around. We're going to be in booths, at the sponsorship booth, at the UFC booth. So, I mean, we are. If you want to get a picture taken with Cain Velasquez, he's going to be there, and he's going to have certain times. He's going to be places. You go. All you do is go there and get your picture taken with him, your autograph with him for him from him. So, very easy. And I tell you, I think it's one of those things. You go once, and you're going to want to go every year.
Absolutely. UFCFightWeek.com is where you can get all set up for that. And, of course, the weekend is a weekend full of fights. On July 5th, you've got Weidman and Lyoto Machida, as well as Rousey and Alexis Davis. Two huge fights. This is, obviously, if you follow the sport, you know that the July 4th weekend, a big weekend for the UFC. And it's double-stacked with, of course, those two big fights. And then the next night, you get BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar. Talk a little bit about the Weidman and Machida fight.
You know, it's going to be very interesting. Machida brings just a different game plan, you know, with his karate style, and he's leaned back a lot. So, but I'm sure Chris, being a smart guy, he's going to have somebody in his camp that's going to mimic that. And obviously, Chris has done very well against strikers, you know, with his last two fights against Anderson.
He's done very well against everybody.
Yes, he has. And so but Machida and Anderson are a lot different, you know, as far as their styles on their feet. So it'll just be interesting. And, of course, you know, Machida's got a pretty good takedown defense, but I would got to think if Chris wants to get to the ground, he's gonna be able to take him to the ground with his high-power wrestling game.
Ronda Rousey looks to remain unblemished and probably one of the biggest breakout stars in the last couple of years as she takes on Alexis Davis. Tell me what Alexis brings to this that nine other people have not been able to bring.
Well, you know, I don't know if she's going to bring a whole lot more different. You know, Ronda's a big girl in the weight class. She's very strong, and her ground game is just so good. I would have to say Ronda is going to be the favorite here. But, you know, Alexis has got to stay strong with her punches. She's going to want to keep it on her feet and not going to let, you know, Ronda Rousey, the stronger girl, bigger girl, get on top of her, because that's where she's deadly.
Two more questions before I let you bounce. When you see Ronda and she's developing as a fighter, her striking is getting much better. Mentally, you obviously been there as you add weapons to the arsenal. What does that do to you when you walk into the octagon and you now know, oh, well, now I can knock, I've been armbarring people, now I can knock people out?
You know, it brings you a certain amount of confidence, and confidence is great in the octagon. I always envisioned, you know, like a plumber. Plumber's got a huge toolbox when he walks into a house. I want to do the same thing. Every time I learn a new technique, whether it be striking, takedown, or submission, I put something new in my toolbox. So every time I walked in the octagon, I had a bigger toolbox than I had the fight before. And Ronda's the same way. She's getting more and more confident from all these tools she's learning, and it makes her much more deadly, because if nothing else, if she doesn't use that new tool, she's got more confidence. And confidence is a big thing out there.
And then the very next night, the Ultimate Fighter 19, as we see BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar go at it one more time. And I don't know, maybe it's just me buying into the hype on television, but BJ, Matt, seems like a different person.
Well, and I would say he is. You know, BJ asked for this fight. And when you got somebody that really asks for a fight, you know he's going to be 100%. He's going to change things up. And he wants this win from Frankie Edgar. So I got to think it's going to be a different fight, and BJ is going to be ready.
A legend in the sport, Matt Hughes, is joining us. You've come back from Africa to talk to us in your driveway, so I'm going to let you get to your family and have a wonderful weekend. We will see you at the Fan Expo in July. Have an awesome weekend, and we will talk to you soon, my friend.
See you guys there.
As always, you can follow along all weekend long on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. We will catch you next week. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.
Follow our Twitter account at WOW Show.